Bilingual in America.
ثنائي اللغة في أمريكا.
Bilinguismo negli Stati Uniti.
Bilingue in America.
Ser bilingue in America.
在美国能说两种语言的人。
I'm Suzanne Lasser.
I'm Yarina Sanción.
And this is Bilingual in America.
Today, we are joined again by Andrea Honigsfeld. If you have not already heard of her or read any of her amazing books, we want you to know that she is professor in the School of Education and Human Services at Molloy University in Long Island, New York, author of multiple books, staff developer, keynote speaker, coach, and consultant. And today, we are going to be talking about another book that she will be releasing this April. And for our listeners, remember we first spoke with Andrea a few years ago about Equity Insights in Action, and then last season we spoke with her and Joan LaChance about collaboration and co-teaching for dual language learners. And today we are going to talk about Growing Language and Literacy, the secondary edition for grades 6 through 12. Back in 2019, this book was released for K-8 educators to support those learners. And now Heinemann is ready to have a focus on the secondary level, which excites me because of my role beyond the podcast. So Andrea, welcome, welcome, welcome. We know you just got back from Cabe.
I'm so honored that you invited me back on your podcast, and I'm so excited that I get to speak to you about this forthcoming book and in general about multilingual learners' language and literacy needs and what we can do as educators to collaborate, to work together, and to support this population more intensively, more intentionally.
So we're going to dive right in. And why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what they can expect for Growing Language and Literacy, the 6 through 12 secondary edition?
Well, I wonder if anybody is familiar with the K-8 edition. In that, I have 5 chapters on the 5 levels of proficiency and focusing on 5 different strategy strengths. I changed it up quite a bit in this secondary edition to better match the needs of teachers who work in the secondary, middle school, and high school context, and streamlined the strategies a little bit. So I still have 5 chapters on the 5 levels of proficiency. I am using the TESOL levels just to be a little bit more generic across the United States and internationally. I use the TESOL framework. Our international advocacy organization has a framework that's very similar to WIDA, very similar to just about every state when it comes to determining the levels of proficiency. Those 5 levels are starting, emerging, developing, expanding, and bridging. And the 4 strategy strengths that I am weaving throughout every chapter include 1, social emotional support. 2, experiential learning. 3, supporting our students through multiple modes of communication. And finally, technology integration.
So it's so important that we think about each of those strands, because it's a constant conversation with the teachers that I work with. And I, you know, whether it's about the social emotional aspect or how can I make sure that I'm weaving in the technology, because we can't teach in isolation just the reading, writing, listening, speaking components that we know are important for developing multilingual learners' vocabulary in English, but also really supporting the whole child. So I'm also wondering, you know, what you feel we need to give teachers more of as part of their post-secondary preparation work, right? Before they hit the classroom, what are some of the nuggets that you feel that you really target in teacher preparation, right? As they look at this book as a core resource potentially when they're getting their master's degree.
I think all teachers come to their first classrooms as new teachers with so much excitement, such high hopes and high expectations for their students and for themselves as well, that it could be a little bit of a culture shock to see a classroom of learners that come from around the world with different experiential paths, with different lived experiences, And the college or university classroom is very different from the actual K-12 or 6-12 classroom. So a little nugget of wisdom that I'd like to share is to enter that classroom with high expectations, high hopes. When you come into the classroom and you first meet multilingual learners, look through the lens of what the children, what the students can do, what full humanities, rich lived experiences, wonderful cultural heritages, and multiple languages or linguistic assets they bring to the classroom, rather than through the lens of deficiencies. It would be very easy to pinpoint what a child cannot do. But what if we said they cannot do it yet, and we're working together to put them on that trajectory to accelerate their language and literacy development, but more importantly, to accelerate their sense of belonging, the sense of understanding what is happening in that secondary classroom in the United States, which is probably very, very different from where they came from.
And I have to say that one of the reasons why Suzanne and I respect and admire your work so much is that that is a continuous thread that you communicate and anchor your work in, to really view our students through that lens of asset. Because when we sit around the table and talk about children and what they bring, we forget to look at them holistically in that way. And it's really key that we remember that just because they're not doing something yet that is an expectation in an academic setting, they bring other wealth of knowledge and experience that you and I would be at ground zero, right? That we would be beginners or novices. I really respect that about the work that you do and how you continuously communicate that and reframe that for us. So thank you for that. I know, and from our experience with you and watching you in action at La Cosecha, I know that you live your life in collaboration. This must start from your home life and your professional life. Like, you just ooze collaboration. So for this work to be impactful, what would you say is necessary to have success in a collaborative partnership?
Well, I think you got that right. I think collaboration might be my middle name. My middle name is actually Maria, but my collaboration, many, many of my collaborative partners are also embrace this same idea that you can only go so far alone. When we combine our expertise, when we open up our hearts and minds to other perspectives, then we can be deeper, more critical, and also more creative thinkers. And there's not one solution, not one right way to work with multilingual learners or any child in our classroom. We truly need to tap into each other's clinical expertise, the many years of classroom experiences, as well as the knowledge and understanding that we gain from other sources, such as research and evidence-based best practices. But not one person can be the holder of all that knowledge or all that experience. So when we create that collaborative context in which we share what works, what can work better, what we have learned about our students or from our students, then our work could be more creative and more impactful.
I appreciate that so very much. I feel like sometimes we feel that we, as the teacher and the leader in our classroom, that we have to know everything about everything, and that's just not practical. It's just not realistic. It's, you know, we have to really look to see how we can work together and lean on each other's expertises. How do your partnerships come to be? Like, I mean, what I witnessed at La Cosecha, just sitting at lunch as you were talking to brand new teachers, you right away ask them a question, you listen intuitively, and created something magical in a matter of minutes. How does that happen? How do you have that sense? How do you know how to do that.
And Yarina, don't forget, right? Then she asked that young teacher, right? Young in her career educator to write it down on a napkin. And then she took it with her, right? And what a powerful moment.
Well, I think what you witnessed is just one of those moments when we, or at least I firmly believe that as an educator, I have to show my vulnerability, that I don't know everything. I always have something to learn from somebody else. And no matter how many years of experience I have or how many books I have written or how many conferences I've been to, I go to the conferences and I read other people's research and publications because I need to continue to learn. So this probably comes from that lifelong desire to learn. That learning is never finished. We're never done. There's always something else that we can open up our minds to and try something new, hear another perspective, engage with another person. And that's probably what you witnessed with that little napkin example of inviting this new teacher to share her wisdom, to share her understanding with me.
So I just made a connection. In the same way that you advocate that we view our students and from their asset, you also view all your collaborators with that same lens, right? Yeah. You didn't count her contribution because she was a beginning teacher. In fact, you understood the power and the value behind whatever she was sharing in that moment with her fresh eyes, right? And I can, now I get it. This is how you operate all the time. This is your lens for everything that you do and for everything that you bring in your research and in your action research, in your collaborations. You look at every opportunity from that lens of assets.
Oh, thank you. And going back to the Growing Language and Literacy book, I could not have written this alone, even though if you look at it, you know that it's not a co-authored book. I have solo authored these two books, the K-8 and the 6-12 version, which is very, very rare for me. I have almost no other books like that. But with that said, I have intensely collaborated with dozens and dozens of educators who so generously shared their examples, artifacts from their classrooms, tools and strategies that they tried. They even went to the very, very difficult extent to get parental permissions from students, caregivers, guardians, so that I could feature student work. So that was such an amazing process of collaboration because I've learned so much from what teachers are doing, what their students are able to do, and how to capture and showcase those examples. Was truly a privilege for me. That's my other perspective, that I feel really humbled when anybody is willing to listen to me, like the two of you, or is willing to work with me. I feel that that's an honor, that I feel appreciated and welcomed into that space when we have a conversation or where we exchange some ideas.
I love what you said earlier on, Andrea, about high expectations and high hopes. That is so important because as I think back, right, each school year, and I've been doing this, you know, for 26 years at this point, I go in with high expectations and high hopes that I can be better than I was last year to my students, to my staff, to the families, to the district as a network itself. And that is, I think, part of the reason that we continue to do this work. And of course, you know, this idea of linguistic assets. It is really important that we continue to push this conversation in this country about the added value of being multilingual and continuously dispel the myth that America is English only and that by focusing on one language, we are actually helping children and our society when we know that it really is just the opposite. So I would be remiss if I didn't include that on our podcast.
Definitely. If I could just share with you, this is the first time I'm publicly sharing this, that I'm studying Spanish. I'm really late to the game. I studied 6 other languages in my lifetime. I had to study Russian in Hungary because that was part of the national curriculum. It was mandatory to study Russian, which I did for 8 years. But other than Russian, I studied French and German and Italian. I lived in Iceland as a Fulbright scholar, and I just try to learn a few important phrases. But now I'm full force on day 83 on Duolingo, studying Spanish, and I'm thoroughly enjoying this opportunity. And I'm practicing now my Spanish as well as I travel to conferences. So you're never too old to learn another language. The brain is wired to be multilingual. There's a lot, of course, about second language acquisition out there. There is the is there an advantage to learn another language when you're younger? There are so many different schools of thought on that. My experience is that just learn, just never give up on yourselves, and start communicating with the children, with the parents, even if you're only learning a few really important phrases. When you speak in the students, in the families' languages to them, if you're able to say a few words, "I'm happy to see you, welcome to our school," it speaks to the heart, not just to the mind.
So important. And, you know, I think that that's also, you had spoken about vulnerability. And when you put yourself in a novice position to learn a new language, you're really putting yourself out there to be vulnerable and to go through the process of what our multilingual learners go through all the time. And it develops a sense of compassion and just admiration, and to really see everything that they do, everything that they bring to the plate. I think it's so important for us to remember. And I always remember I had a mentor once who used to say, I used to teach first grade early on in my career. And she used to say, "This is your eighth year in first grade, but it's their first year in first grade. You have to remember what that feels like, what it means to be a beginner at something." And so I'm so grateful you shared that with us.
And it's actually very enjoyable, because it's learning a new language is, or can be likened to going on a journey, like you're exploring a new place. You're figuring out how that linguistic system works, what fits together, what goes with what, and what other similar experiences I had in my previous language learning experiences, whether it comes to nouns having gender. Spanish has that, Russian has that, German has that, French has that. Okay, so I can really connect to how the language, the new language that I'm learning, operates. So just having too much fun with it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. So if I could just pivot the conversation a little bit, one of the challenges that I experience when I talk to colleagues who teach multilingual learners is that when they would do their small group work with their children, often there's an expectation that they have become the reading teacher. And oftentimes they have to defend their space that they are more than just a reading teacher. So could you talk a little bit about what do teachers of multilingual learners do differently compared to reading teachers for native speakers?
Sure. So if you already speak the language, the target language in this case, it's English, and you're teaching reading in English, some of that meaning making comes quite naturally to the students. So don't have to define key words. Most of the words the students will be familiar with. They must have had also tons of experience with oracy, being able to talk about a particular topic that's covered in that reading material. But when you work with multilingual learners or English learners, you need to see reading as part of a multimodal, multi-literacy construct. In other words, you can't start just decoding and putting words together, making sense of one sentence at a time or one paragraph at a time with a multilingual learner if that particular reading material, it does not connect to their lived experiences. We have to think of reading instruction for multilingual learners in this context of multi-literacies, multimodal, multisensory, multiple entry points, multilingual experiences. Multi will be my key word or key prefix here. So that's what sets us apart from a reading teacher teaching reading to English proficient students. When we teach reading, it has to be positioned within multiple literacies and multiple experiences. Let me give you an example maybe for that. How can a child read about it? This is a true example. I had a coaching experience in which the students, second grade students, were reading about the Titanic. And it was a reading lesson for multilingual learners. However, when we get to about halfway, the halfway point of the lesson, one little girl raised her hand and said, "What's the Titanic?" So the entire lesson went way above her head. There was no contextualization, not enough understanding of what are we really reading about? How can we make some meaningful connections to whatever that reading lesson focuses on, which is main ideas and supporting details in this particular case, if the child cannot position that topic within his or her experiential past, cannot make meaningful connections to what the reading is all about, cannot have the opportunity to talk about it, to maybe view a short video about it, to look at some pictures. So having that type of multisensory, multimodal source of input, the visual literacy part and the oracy dimension are very important to reading development for multilingual learners. So deconstructing, meaning making, and then reconstructing the text for multilingual learners is a slightly different process.
That's a really powerful answer. And for any language teacher out there who has had to debate this point, you heard it from Dr. Andrea Hoynsfeld. So make this your mantra and make the prefix multi work for you.
Thank you. And that's an easy answer because sometimes we have so much to offer to our colleagues or, you know, in a conversation like this, so much comes up. So one day I was running a professional learning session for a group of high school teachers, and I guess they got a little bit overwhelmed by the possibilities and the expectations that we could have for our multilingual learners. So one participant said, "Could you just give me an easy answer? How about a one-word answer to what I should be doing?" And that's when I came up with this one-word answer, like, "You want a one-word answer? Let me think about that. I don't have a word. I have a prefix for you. I don't even have a word, just a prefix. Keep multi in mind. If your teaching is multidimensional, what does that mean? So let's unpack that. So it's multilingual. It's honoring the students' home languages, exposing the students to complex ideas in a language that's accessible to them. It's multisensory. It's so important for the students to see, hear, read, write, speak, interact with materials in multiple ways. And multimodal, that's connected to the modalities of communication. But also the multiple entry points. Maybe that little girl in my example from the second grade classroom really needed a deeper understanding of the Titanic, but the rest of the students knew what the Titanic was about. So understanding that some students' prior knowledge or prior experiences will be at different levels. And we could go on and on. So I will challenge your listeners to what other multis can they think of? Multi-level, multi... I don't know. What other words can we think of that begins with multi, multimedia? And so forth. Lots of words out there that begin with multi.
Yes. I am excited because I feel like so many teachers struggle with this. And I think they're just missing the backing of knowing and trusting in their craft and trusting in their own knowledge and trusting in their understanding of who their students are. So this is a really powerful conversation.
For our listeners, I'm smiling from ear to ear. My cup is full. It is always great just to have a moment in time with Andrea. And I just want to remind our listeners that you can go to AndreaHoenigsfeld.com where you can read more about her workshops, consulting, keynotes, books, resources. Really familiarize yourself with the multiple ways that she can support you as an educator in this important work that we do with multilingual learners.
Yes, and I also wanted to mention that as Suzanne had referenced, we were fortunate enough to have a conversation with Dr. Andrea Hoynsfeld during season 2, episode 8, and season 3, episode 7. And we are going to have her back again because in her collaborative world, she is always working on a new project, new book, just bringing her wisdom, her knowledge, her experience, for all the ways that you lead, for all the ways that you passionately share your collaboration, your energy, your commitment is just so beautiful. We thank you so much for what you do and how you continue to grow this work, continue to be a beacon for teachers who are seeking answers, who want to grow, who want to do a good job with their students. And I thank you for always leading that charge, for really viewing all people, students, teachers, leaders, from that lens of access. Thank you so much.
And I thank the both of you for being champions of this population and of this work, and for providing so much wisdom through your podcast series. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your interest in the stories we share. By sharing, following, and liking our podcast on anchor.fm Bilingual in America and our Instagram blog at bilingualinamerica.podcast, you are speaking your beauty. We welcome your comments and feedback, and we appreciate your support. Follow us, like us, share us.